You are listening to Speaking Of by WFSU Public Media. Hurricane season is upon us, and even though below average activity is forecast in the Atlantic, experts say Floridians need to prepare as normal. Gina Jordan speaks with Leon County Government's Kevin Peters and Matt Cavell, as well as Florida Public Radio meteorologist Megan Borowski, about the new season and what residents need to know.
Well, it's here. We're back in hurricane season. Forecasters expect a less active season than normal, which of course doesn't mean we won't get a major hurricane. We'll hear more about the seasonal forecast from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network coming up. But first, are you ready for a big storm?
We usually board up the windows, fill up with gas, and buy lots of canned goods. We'll be good.
I feel like I've gotten a good gauge with them of like when and how much to prepare. I feel like they've all kind of met my expectations. I always make sure to have my go bag ready and to have a plan set before a big storm comes in.
One time my roof got a hole in it from a tree. And when I was a kid, I remember my parents had to go onto the roof to patch it up during the hurricane. I've had a fence fully come down and then another tree in the roof. I have food and batteries and stuff, candles, but I feel like you almost can't fully be prepared.
That was In Order, Sarah Hayes, Sean Dunnigan, and Carson Fletcher. They spoke with our intern, Elena Babb, at Lake Ella. All said they've lived here for 5 years or less, but they are from different areas of Florida and went through hurricanes growing up. The Big Bend has to stay prepared for big storms, and I chatted about that with Leon County Director of Emergency Management, Kevin Peters, and Matt Cavell, head of community relations and resilience with the county.
Really severe weather hazards have no real single season in Florida. We can have hazardous weather all 12 months. So being prepared is critical year long.
Yeah. What are the biggest concerns that you guys have for Leon County going into this hurricane season?
You know, one of the things that we hear people say is like, oh, I'm from Florida. I've lived here my whole life. I know hurricanes. And that can be a little bit of a dangerous attitude because you have to treat every hurricane as different because every storm is going to be different. So having all those preparedness things that we advocate, you know, having a family emergency plan, knowing what you're going to do during storm season, having a way to get emergency alerts and weather warnings all year long is important, and having your disaster supply kit, having supplies for each member of your family, everybody having their own kit. Those are the things that people need to have all year long, and they need to be thinking about as they go into hurricane season and what the next storm could bring, not what the last storms brought.
And to add to that, the shifting landscape, too, for insurance coverage for homeowners and for renters is very important for them to understand what their policy can cover. Some folks, since previous storms or even in the most recent year, their insurance policy provider has either changed the conditions by which they've renewed or they've even had to change policy providers in general because of that and changing landscape. So don't assume that you know your policy and know it before hurricane season.
That's a good point. I think a lot of people suddenly have new carriers. It's a big discussion with the legislature. So, yeah. I like that idea of everybody in the family has their own kit. Like, that could be fun for kids.
Yeah, right? We've seen a lot of success when going in with younger audiences and talking about the things that they would want if the power was off or the lights were off. And what were the things that would mean that your devices that you normally turn to just aren't available for you? Mm-hmm. What are the types of entertainment in a bucket, like coloring books or youth books or anything like that, that would still be able to entertain a crowd of folks of young kids? And so they have that ownership. They can decorate the bucket. They can put things inside of it. And they can make it be a fun activity for the entire family.
Yeah.
The one thing I want to make sure people remember to put into their buckets, download a copy of your contacts from your cell phone. If you were to not be able to charge your phone, if something happens to your phone during disaster, that's a key thing. But kind of on the youth thing, our Billy the Bucket program is probably one of the most unique things that we're doing in the state. There is no mascot for youth preparedness and disasters. You know, the Forest Service has Smokey Bear, and I think everybody knows that, but there isn't an equivalent in disaster space. Yeah. So we're really pushing the Billy Bucket program, the youth education, trying to empower these young Floridians that are going to grow up in the state and teach them preparedness skills that'll last a lifetime.
Yeah. Tallahassee got lucky a few years ago between 2023 and 2024. Taylor County, unfortunately, was not so lucky. Did we take any lessons from that or really from any active storm seasons we've had?
So every storm, every emergency, whether it be a large tropical system or whether it's an emergency on a campus, gives us all the opportunity to review our plans and make changes. So we at the county have implemented and reviewed after all of the storms, including the activations you just mentioned, like Helene and Debbie and Milton even. They've given us the opportunity to become a better organization for the next storm. So we've implemented more than 300 different recommendations and changes at the county after every storm gives us the chance, or every emergency gives us the chance to challenge our plans. Some of those have been things like in our Citizens Connect mobile app, which we'd encourage folks to download, which can send you push notifications and all the other details and digital tech that you need. It has maps in it now when you receive these notifications that can tell you the affected area, so you can be very specific about what is in threat and what actions specifically you should take from experts. So we've listened and we've made those changes and completely retooled that app.
I feel like you guys would be like on your phone, like note to self. If there's 300 changes, like you're constantly thinking, right? You have to be ready.
So you're totally right. In an emergency operations center, which we have at Public Safety Complex, it staffs up with more than 120 people from all these different agencies. And we have a whiteboard. We write all the things that we could do better next time around. And then after an emergency, we meet with all of those 120 folks to get a hot wash, which is an after-action term that we use in emergency management to say what was good, what was bad, three ups, three downs. And Kevin's been great at being able to do that with all of the partners.
So based on all of that, what do Leon County residents get wrong? Or, you know, what could they do better with preparation?
Well, you know, I think it's the trying to avoid the complacency and that I'm from Florida. I've lived here my entire life. It's embracing preparedness as a part of life in Florida, using these resources and just making a part of your family life to work over time, to continue to build your supplies, to mitigate your home, to protect it from storms. That's what we would like people to do. I don't know that it's about things that people miss or don't do, but I think it's taking the opportunity to stay engaged with it is what's important.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about vulnerable populations and how the county helps those folks when a storm is coming.
So for us at Leon County, we know that our vulnerable populations need help before a storm arrives. So we, in coordination with the Florida Department of Health in Leon County, run a special needs registry. You can find out more information on that with the Citizens Connect app or at leoncountyfl.gov/EI. That's emergency information. That is a way for us to stay in touch with folks who have medical devices that require electricity to be able to do oxygen condensing and things like that and refrigerated medicines. And it gives us a chance to be able to bring them to a special needs shelter where then if a hurricane comes and they need to evacuate their home because they need that electricity, they can go to that shelter to have that continuity of care. After a storm has come and gone and it's affected the electrical network, we reach out to and call our senior living facilities to ensure that they have their plans in place, that they are implementing those plans, that if they have any other additional needs, we will work with the state of Florida to provide that. So we make sure that we are focused on all levels, senior, medical care, and youth, all in preparation before a storm.
That's a lot to think about. Like I'm thinking about you guys coordinating with schools and, you know, hospitals and utilities and just first responders in general. That's a heavy lift.
Yeah, it keeps us busy. That's our day to day. You know, when people may wonder, what does emergency management do when it's not hurricane season? It's building those relationships. It's cultivating those partnerships to make sure that all of our plans and all of the updates that we make, you know, Matt talked about our improvements, we're synchronizing those across the different partners and the different agencies to make sure it goes from being just an after-action finding to an implemented program change.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. I mean, when we say plans, it shouldn't be the first time that we call a lead person at Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare or that we call someone at FAMU campus. That should not be the first time they hear from us is when an emergency hits. We should be developing and cultivating that relationship and coordinating those plans and responses prior to an emergency. And that's our commitment. So when we get lucky and have a year that we might not be directly impacted, it's 365 days of work in building those relationships with all those dozens and dozens of community partners that keep us all safe.
Yeah. Can you talk about how evacuation decisions are made and what residents should know about evacuation zones?
Yeah, so evacuations, we're going to talk hurricane evacuation since we're going into hurricane season. They're based primarily on risk from storm surge. Storm surge evacuation zones have been established. You know, we work with the State Division of Emergency Management, the National Hurricane Center, and all the local emergency management agencies. They work through evacuation, a statewide evacuation study that gets updated around every 10 years or so. And so using information from the Hurricane Center on storm surge inundation potential, these zones are analyzed in all the coastal counties. A few inland counties like Leon, storm surge could push all the way in. So we develop these zones with zone A's, typically your coastal zones, all the way up to zone E, which could be an inland zone. Mm-hmm. So based on forecasts with hurricanes, an emergency manager in a county will, you know, in coordination with the Hurricane Center, what the storm surge risk is, they'll determine what that evacuation level should be in that community. Now you move into the inland communities like Leon County, where we predominantly are not affected by storm surge. It's more about wind risk to vulnerable housing. FEMA has provided guidance that says, you know, manufactured and mobile homes, prefabricated type structures, they're not as resilient to the wind as traditional built homes. So for inland communities, our focus for evacuation is going to be the wind vulnerable housing, issuing evacuation orders for people that live in mobile or manufactured or RV type homes to go to a safer structure. Those homes are just based on FEMA guidance, not as resilient to wind impacts. So if your listeners are in coastal counties, it's going to be storm surge risk. Mm-hmm. The further you move inland away from the storm surge risk, it's going to be a wind risk that you need to concern yourself. And then a tertiary concern would be if you live in a flood-prone area, knowing somewhere you can go to stay safer outside of that impact area.
Yeah. And when a mandatory evacuation order is issued, there's always people that don't want to go. What do you do?
Well, you should go. You know, it's an official legal order. We need people to take action, and that all goes back to the that concept of not second-guessing storms, treating every storm with respect, you know, just knowing that you can rebuild, you can come back and repair, but if you get stuck in the storm surge, you could lose your life. You might not be able to be rescued, or if you survive the storm, it may be days and days before rescuers can get to you, and you may not have the supplies you need. So it's just be safe and don't take unnecessary risk.
Yeah. What general resources, Matt, this is for you. What general resources do you think that Leon County residents need to be aware of?
So that one of the most proactive and comprehensive efforts that we do now at Leon County is to distribute the disaster survival guide to every home and business by mail. That disaster survival guide is about 20 to 24 pages, and it has within it all of the primer information that we've been talking about for what would you do potentially with wildfire? What does your insurance policy need? What is the difference between a watch and a warning? That document doesn't run out of power. That document is printed, and it is available with all of the best information to contact not only Leon County Emergency Management, but also neighboring counties. We talked about the digital as well. That's important. So the Citizens Connect mobile app and all those other emergencies that maybe don't have prolonged power outage. And then obviously County Emergency Management is available at 850-606-3700 to talk with citizens and businesses about developing a plan before disaster strikes. After a disaster strikes, that number that I just said, 850-606-3700, becomes the Citizens Information Line. If anybody needs to call and talk and receive information about operations such as sandbags, such as where food and water is distributed, such as what shelters are open, such as what we just talked about for evacuations, where do I go? What should I do? How do I do it? Is it mandatory? Is it voluntary? Tell me, I'm hearing things, tell me more. That is the number to talk to our county staff experts right there in the Emergency Operations Center.
Actual humans.
Very
available.
Much. Yep. Pick up the phone. Talk to us. We staff that immediately at the start of any emergency, even including the FSU shooting that happened last year. Any emergency, we know what people want most are two things. They want safety and they want information. And we give all of the right ways to get the best information so that you can stay safe.
So last piece of advice or words of wisdom, things that you think people that are listening need to know. Kevin, let's start with you.
Yeah, sometimes I try and share a, a personal story, you know, because Matt and I, we worked during the storm, emergency operations center. You know, I've had to check my home. I know what my risks are. I have a plan for my spouse and my kids, a couple of plans where they could go, and they have their disaster supply kits because I'm going to be busy working. I can't help out. Yeah. So those are the important things, is checking the risks that you have to your home. Do you have that wind or water risk? Do you have the emergency plan for your family? And do you have the disaster supply kits and a way to get emergency alerts?
And Matt?
One thing we know is that prolonged power outage can cause stress and challenge for households because we're so used to being very, very connected through electricity to so many things. So posts online and the app we just talked about and all that other stuff. We should always encourage households to have backup power packs, and they should be charged prior to an emergency. You should be sure that you have that on hand, because I can't tell you that you should be prepared not to use your phone, but you should be prepared to have the devices charged so that you may be able to use them. So please contemplate that, but also understand that the utility workers that are out there are working 18-hour days to restore everything possible to get this community back up again. And just really want to encourage families to be power independent for as much as they can.
Excellent advice. Thank you so much. Matt Cavell, spokesperson with Leon County Government, and Leon County Emergency Management Director Kevin Peters, thank you for the work that you guys do. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I recently chatted via Zoom with Florida Public Radio meteorologist Megan Borowski, who is part of our emergency network team. She has the latest National Hurricane Center forecast for the season.
And it's what we expected. There's a 55% chance that we'll have a below average season. They're looking at 8 to 14 named storms, of which they think 3 to 6 will be hurricanes. Of those, 1 to 3 could be major hurricanes. So that's on the lower end of the spectrum. Reason being, for the below average forecast, is there's a developing El Nino. And what happens with El Nino is it increases vertical wind shear in the tropical Atlantic. And so that helps to prevent storms from organizing. So that's the main driver behind this below average forecast.
Yeah, everybody's excited about that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I don't like when these types of forecasts come out, right? Because we can still have a below average season in terms of storm totals, but we can still have a Category 5 make landfall. So it's a sigh of relief in one way, because it's like, well, maybe we'll luck out this year. But at the same time, I don't want to get lulled into a false sense of security, because it's very, very possible that the couple of storms that do develop could be strong, could impact our area.
Yeah, because you just said that El Nino has to do with wind shear, mm-hmm. but we also have hot water still. Right,
warm sea surface temperatures, right? And one of the things to think about, too, is that, you know, El Nino in the Pacific will increase vertical wind shear in the tropical Atlantic. But you could have a tropical wave that makes it across the Atlantic. And then if it enters the Caribbean, where there's low vertical wind shear, you could have a rapid intensification event. You know, I think most, if not all, of the major hurricanes that have made landfall, at least in the recent past, were tropical storms, I think, 48 hours before impacts. And so they're in the Caribbean, or they're, you know, close to the Caribbean. So that's something to look out for, is that, you know, maybe we won't have anything develop in the tropical Atlantic, or, you know, it'll be squelched a little bit, but we can still have that situation where we have a wave arrive to the Caribbean where wind shear is lower and it could rapidly intensify.
Yeah. What would be some early signs that meteorologists might be watching for that could hint at the season taking some kind of unusual turn?
Well, I think on the seasonal forecast scale of things, if the El Nino doesn't pan out the way that they're currently forecasting, that would be something that might change things. Right now, I believe they said in their press conference, there's a 98% chance that we'll have El Nino develop over the next couple of months. So it's a very, very confident forecast. I never say certain, but I'll say confident. It's a very, very confident forecast that we'll have El Nino. But on that seasonal scale, yeah, if the El Nino for some reason doesn't arrive, or maybe it's delayed, that could translate to different effects in the tropical Atlantic. And that could mean maybe we do have more storms. The good thing about the seasonal forecasts is Colorado State and the National Hurricane Center, they'll issue updates as we progress through season. And so we shouldn't be caught, you know, unaware.
Yeah. I keep seeing stuff on YouTube about this might be a super El Nino. What does that mean for us potentially?
Well, I think the lay people, for lack of a better term, are using the word super. I believe in the National Hurricane Center and in weather prediction, it's either a moderate or a strong El Nino. So there's a very high chance that it will be at least a moderate El Nino, and there's a good chance that it will be a strong El Nino. What this means is they're just looking at the magnitude of the warm pool in the Pacific Ocean. You know, that's how they quantify the strength of the El Nino, is how warm or how anomalously warm the temperatures are in the Pacific. Moderate El Nino is 1 degree Celsius above normal, and then strong is 1.5 degrees Celsius above normal. So it might seem like a little bit of a change, right? It's like half a degree. What does that mean? But it can have impacts across the globe. And so strong El Nino would mean even stronger vertical wind shear in the tropical Atlantic, meaning that we have less favorable conditions for tropical cyclones to develop. It's kind of a domino effect, so to speak.
Gotcha. Okay, good. So we've had those seasons where different parts of Florida seem to keep getting hit. They'll get the worst of it. In 2023 and 24, in North Florida, especially Taylor County, kept getting hit. So if this is supposed to be a less active season, based on what you guys know, any insight on where problems potentially could occur in Florida?
Well, seasonal forecasting really doesn't give us insight as to the potential track of storms. It's just going to give us a basic overview of, totals compared to average. Once we get into season and we start looking at the position of steering forces like the subtropical high, that's when we can start to draw maybe inferences of, where we think storms will track. What I will say is, if you do look at patterns of tropical cyclones by decade, it seems like there's a decadal shift in the steering. Like some years, it just seems like every year it's, for example, the past couple of years have been the Big Bend and the west coast of Florida. You've had years where a couple years in a row you have the central Gulf Coast. From the seasonal forecast, you can't really predict when or where the storms will develop and track. They're going to just give us more of an insight as to overall activity.
Yeah. Well, and I understand too that it sounds like the cone of uncertainty has been tweaked a little bit.
Yeah, they're looking at, well, there's a couple of things that they've done. First of all, and it's fantastic, they've added into the actual cone graphic inland, so counties that do not border a waterway. Those counties that have alerts in effect will also be highlighted in the cone. In the past, it's just been the coastal areas will have that highlighted, storm surge watch or hurricane watch or tropical storm watch. And visually, it makes the viewer not fully assess the risk inland, right? But this year, the cone will have the alerts throughout the entire path of the storm, including for inland locations. So you think about Central Florida, even up in the Panhandle too, for the counties bordering Georgia and then going farther north, you'll see that your county is highlighted under a tropical storm or hurricane watch or warning in that cone. And I think it might seem like a little tweak, but I think it gives a holistic and a more potent message of even if you're inland, there's a very good chance you're going to experience impacts, and here's what those alerts are. I'm excited about down the line, it looks like, so not this year, but in the future, they're looking at also implementing new ways to communicate time and the forecast timing uncertainty. And I think that that's going to do a lot of good once they actually implement it. Because one of the things that everybody wants to know is, well, when is this going to hit me? Or how certain are we are we that this is going to hit at this particular time? So I'm excited to see what those test graphics are and when they implement them. But for this season, it's the main change is the warnings inland for the cone.
That all sounds promising. That's great. We'd like to focus on wind speeds. What kind of hurricane dangers do you think Floridians really underestimate the most?
A good question. I think it depends on where you are, honestly. Where you are and what you've experienced, I think, is the thing that influences how you look at hurricane hazards. If you've lived in Florida all your life, if you've lived in the coast all your life, and you've not had devastating storm surge in your area, you might underestimate the storm surge threat. Or if you've lived inland and you've not had an outer band with strong tornadoes come through your area, you might underestimate the tornado threat. So I think it's contingent on your location and your past lived experience. The thing that I urge everybody is to know that every storm is different. The category doesn't necessarily mean Cat 5, we're all going to die, or Cat 1, oh, it's going to be fine. Each storm brings its different risks, and it's also dependent on the environmental setup ahead of time, right? So, if you have a very wet environment ahead of time, the rainfall and the flood potential might be really magnified by a storm coming through. So that's kind of my thought there. But yeah, the main thing is that every storm is different, and don't compare your past experience to the present forecast or the present storm. I think the biggest thing to take away is listen to what the forecast is for hazards and timing and take it seriously. And maybe, for this one particular event, you might have been overprepared, but it's better to be overprepared and safe than underprepared and, a catastrophe happens.
Great. Okay. So, any new preparedness advice you want to emphasize or anything you want to make sure we do before we hit the peak of the season?
I say it every time. Make sure that you know the needs of your family and the needs of your property. Prepare now while it's nice out, while there aren't any lines. If you need resources, check out the local EM sites. Also, the Florida Division of Emergency Management has resources. Think not about too just about surviving the storm, but think about if you don't have power for several days to a week afterward, if you can't get out several days to a week afterward, if there's no supplies, think of medications and things like that, 3, 5, 7 days after the storm. Do you have what you need to survive? Do you have enough medicine? Do you have treatments that you need to get? Dialysis, that's one example. Think about how you're going to handle those types of needs if, supply chain or transportation is severely impacted. Don't forget about your pets, all of that stuff. Think about that now while you don't have a storm and the stresses of a storm, at your doorstep.
Yeah. All right. Meteorologist Megan Borowski with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. Thank you so much.
You got it.
And WFSU and the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network are here to keep you updated and informed 24/7, and especially during hurricane season.
Check out the Speaking of Podcast version, available on all platforms.